Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here!
Hello, I'm good, Joe.
And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. Okay, before I do anything else, I want to let people know that I finally got up off my ass and put together through cafepress.com a little collection of merchandise you can get for the Cup of Joe show. T-shirts, mugs, of course, mouse pads, bumper stickers, stuff like that. If you go on the blog, that's cupojoe.blogspot.com, there's a banner right at the top there underneath the Cup of Joe banner that says Cup of Joe stuff is now available. Click on that, and that will take you to the ads website, and you can click on any of those items to order them from cafepress.com. And they're a pretty good group. I had made up some stuff from my previous website, and some people bought some stuff from there, and like I said, I finally got up off my ass and got that taken care of. It really is high-quality stuff. I actually purchased a Pax Liberalis bumper sticker that I had made, and it was a fairly graphic image, and it came out in tremendous detail. It didn't, you know, it was really, really professional, which is what I like, and I highly recommend it. That if you're a fan of the show, go there and pick something up. Help me out. You know, help me the fuck out. I'm so fucking broke all the time. God dang, I'm fucking broke. The big news this last week has been the lead-up to, at least as far as the bloggers are concerned anyway, has been the lead-up to the Democratic National Convention, which will formally nominate John Kerry and John Edwards as the team that will run against George W. Bush in the presidential elections. And, you know, I'm always iffy about what's going to go on in these campaigns. And there was one guy in the Bart Cop chat room the other night talking about, well, you know, Bush has alienated these people, he's alienated that people. You know, these people hate him, these people don't like him. You know, there's a lot of people don't like him. And I said, yeah, but Diebold likes him. Diebold is the company that makes the touchscreen voting machines that are going to count about 5 million of the votes this time around. And, of course, they're very shoddy. In fact, in some cases, they have been banned. In California, they have been banned from being used in elections because they're not reliable. They can be easily broken into and the votes changed, and there's no paper trail to follow up on it. You know, you have to have a paper trail. I'm sorry, you have to have something physical. And these things just don't supply it. I don't mind the idea itself. I mean, you could set up a nice thing where, you know, you have the candidate's name and a picture and all that, so people can clearly vote. And then you could have it just print out a ballot that you can double check at it and look at it and see, okay, this is the person I voted for. Not just push a button and God knows where it goes once it gets in that machine, or whether or not it can be changed. And they have some interesting ways of messing with it to make it seem like it's not being messed with. Shunting off a percentage of votes off to a side candidate somewhere. So rather than increasing the amount of votes for one person, you're actually decreasing the amount of votes for the opponent of you. Now, granted, for the Republicans, that can work both ways, because there are certainly Democratic people who are savvy enough to go in there and corrupt the machines too if they wanted to, and I'm not in favor of that. I just want a real election. My motto is always, if we're going to elect an idiot, let's be sure we're electing an idiot. Let's at least be fucking sure about it and not have this kind of sort of, well, maybe he cheated and maybe he didn't. I don't really have time to go into it because I got to go to work, which is, you know, the reality for most people. I mean, the reason why most people don't pay attention to election is, A, they don't think it'll affect them. To a certain extent, they're true, although the Bush administration has certainly proven that they can have a big effect on the economy. And other people just figure that, you know, one party is really not that much different than the other party. And to a certain extent, again, they also have a point, because I get as fed up with the Democrats sometimes as I do with the Republicans. But the Republicans are by far the worst. I mean, there's no real comparison. Democrats have their problems, but damn, these guys are just a bunch of lying bastards. The Republican leadership in particular, the biggest bunch of lying bastards that I can recall we've ever had even in office, including Nixon. Of course, I've only been around since, when I was born, Kennedy was in. That was in 61. And Kennedy had just really started his presidency. But, I really didn't know. I didn't follow politics that much until the mid-late 80s. Oh, excuse me. Ah, professional radio, ladies and gentlemen. Why am I yawning? Any idea why I'm yawning? Who am I talking to? There's nobody here with me in the room. So anyway, the big news is the oncoming Democratic convention. And one of the things that was going to be a potential problem for the convention was the fact that city workers, fire departments, police departments were going to be on strike. And that would have been a really, really incredible sight to have these people working and picketing the places that were going to be holding the convention activities. But they just settled that strike. And it's really, really good. And Daily Kos, actually it was from DHIN in Minnesota, or Missouri, whatever MI is, who posted a comment about it on the Daily Kos blog. That's dailykos.com, DAILYKOS.com. And let me read what he had to say. He said, it's remarkable how seemingly intractable labor disputes can get quickly settled when there's massive pressure on the employer. My favorite, or his favorite, story about outside events leading to a labor settlement concerns the Newspaper Guild and the Detroit News. The Guild had won the vote to be recognized as the collective bargaining agent for the editorial staff at the News, but they hadn't been able to reach an agreement on a first contract with the paper, so they set a strike date of July 31st, 1975. The Teamsters offered to try to moderate the dispute, and both sides were negotiating at the Teamster Hall in Detroit on July 30th, when a person barged into the room and whispered in the ear of the top Teamsters official, who immediately stood up and exited with his staff, leaving the Guild and newspaper bargainers by themselves. A few minutes later, another Teamster came into the room and said something to the effect of, Jimmy's missing, so you all need to get the hell out of here. There was no way the Detroit News would let a labor contract get in the way of covering the disappearance of Jimmy Hoffa, especially since the Detroit Free Press would have scooped the news on everything about the disappearance. Therefore, the Guild got their recognition and their contract, and everyone went straight to work to cover the Hoffa story. All of a sudden, the print deadline was far more important than the strike deadline. Unlike 1975, when the Detroit News' print headline for the Hoffa disappearance was an unexpected deadline that trumped the strike deadline, the city of Boston and its public employee unions have known that it was crucial to settle all outstanding conflicts before the start of the Democratic convention. There seems to have been more than a little brinksmanship from both sides, but in some good news for everyone, Bostonians, the city, the workers, and the Democrats who risk suffering some minor collateral damage if the contracts were not settled, the last of the outstanding contracts was settled this morning. Now, these contract settlements are good for everyone. Well, almost everyone. There's certainly some folks at the Republican National Committee and among the right-wing media that are probably crushed at the news that the contracts were signed, because now they won't be able to show images of union members picketing outside the Fleet Center all week long. And I was thinking about that last comment in there that he made. And I thought to myself, the way they are, why don't they just invent stuff? I mean, why don't they just go out of their way and just say they're still striking and the Democrats are crossing the picture line, and even create some scenes, like, you know, hire some people to be actors, people playing picketers and people playing Democratic delegates fighting their way in, you know, and yelling at the picketers. They could do it. And you know something? I bet you if they did do it, 60% of the country would believe them. Certainly everybody who watches Fox News regularly would believe them if they were to do that. And my question is, what's stopping them at this point? What's stopping them from just doing it? I mean, they've already told such outrageous lies to begin with, and nobody's making them accountable for it. Why don't they just go ahead and do that? And that's what gets me. And I'd be like, if I had all that kind of power and stuff like that, and I was as ruthless as they were, and I had as much disregard for the truth as they do, and they show that every day, then I would just go ahead and do that. There's certainly plenty of time to have videotaped some stuff. You know, they could have gone, you know, months before and gotten some people somewhere and, you know, figured something out to make it look like, you know, you've got Democrats going in there and messing with strikers just to make the Democrats look bad. It won't really matter if later on it proves to be a fake or somebody finds out it was a fake, because, you know, by that time everybody will have forgotten about it anyway, and the attention will have gone elsewhere. And I think that's part of the problem. The other big news was, of course, the 9/11 Commission report, which came out. And, of course, it's laying blame on everybody but the Bush administration. And, of course, the Republicans are screaming, blame Clinton, blame Clinton. And I'm not even going to be fair. As far as I'm concerned, Clinton didn't have anything to do with that. Bush was in office for 9 months. When he heard about, you know, that there was an increased terrorist traffic and there was a chance for a terrorist attack, he promptly went on a fucking vacation. But whatever you can say about Bill Clinton before 9/11, certainly after 9/11, is Bush's fault on everything. From going to war with the wrong country, to using it as an excuse to pound everybody, instead of trying to use the good nature that we got to get some real cooperation done. We had a really, really wonderful opportunity there to bring all the nations into the world together on a serious problem, which terrorism is a serious problem that doesn't just affect the United States. It affects everyone in the world. We recognize that going into World War II. So yes, we were in danger, but also the entire idea of Western civilization was in danger, and we wanted to save that. But these guys are only in it for themselves. So they used it as a hammer to slam anyone who got in their way from their plans, what they wanted to do. Go after Iraq for whatever reasons, whether it was the oil or whether to use it as a strategic position, it doesn't really make a fucking difference. The fact of the matter is, and this has been proven time and time again from people both inside the administration and outside the administration, that Iraq was not a threat to us and was not going to be in a position to be a threat to us, probably ever. And sooner or later, Hussein would have fallen on his own. And even if we talk about getting rid of Saddam was a good idea, the truth of the matter is the way we went about it really fucking sucked. And now there are over 900 dead U.S. servicemen, thousands upon thousands of innocent Iraqis killed. And again, I point out that these poor people, for the most part, are just like us. They're not interested in politics. They're not interested in anything more than getting, you know, supporting their families, raising their kids, getting food for themselves. That's really all they care about. Most people in the world aren't very political in that sense. All they really want is a nice, stable environment so that they can support themselves and be happy in their lives. If you were to ask, if you were to possibly get a poll of everybody in the world, an honest poll, unbiased, I would probably say that probably 90% of the people in the world would think that would be a really, really cool thing if we all just stopped screaming at each other and just tried to concentrate on the important things, like poverty and hunger, stuff like that. But you know, wars are profitable for some people. They're not profitable for everybody. And certainly the people on the poor end of the spectrum get hit hardest by wars, whether it's because they're the soldiers fighting in the battles or because they're the ones devastated by it. The poor always suffer the most. There was an episode of MASH where they had some kids in an orphanage that were staying with at the unit for a while. And I know it's just a TV series, but I always look at that, and I always look at whenever they have, you know, talk about the Korean people there, and I feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for the poor Koreans that had to live during that war, as I feel sorry for the Vietnamese people that had to live during the Vietnamese war, and I feel sorry for the poor Iraqi people who are having to go through all this. This huge disruption in their lives where they're just struggling to get enough food to eat for the day. You know, I feel bad for those people. But there was a situation where one of the guys was pissed off because he had his Purple Heart stolen, and he just assumed one of the Korean kids did it. And another guy was telling him, you know, they steal because they're poor. And he said, well, there's no reason for being poor. If they had any gumption, they go out and get a job like everybody else. And it's like, it's ridiculous. There's no place to get a job. It's in the middle of a fucking war zone. But, you know, ideologues think like that. And granted, the characters are extreme. And the character I mentioned in particular, Frank Burns, is a straw man because he's so obviously ridiculous that even I get to the point where I'm like, man, they're too hard on this poor guy. But there are ideologues that are like that. And the question is always, when an ideologue is put up against reality, when they are shown the results of how they think, how do they react to it? Do they realize, well, maybe I'm wrong about shit? Because you know something? Sometimes people are just fucking wrong. I know I've been wrong about shit before, and I'll be wrong about shit again. I try not to make claims that I can't reason within myself, or at least that I don't believe for myself. I don't always succeed. I don't know everything, but I know enough. Joe knows. Joe knows because Joe sees it. And things are fairly obvious to me, and it's not an ideological point of view. I don't look at something and say, well, I look at this from a certain point of view. I just look at things. And it's like when Vichon was telling me the story about, you know, his parents really struggled during the Depression, but they did okay, and about the Cambodian guy who lived in a really crappy apartment and rode a filthy bus every day, but saved his money for 5 years and bought the donut shop. Hey, I'm all for shit like that. I've got no reason to be against shit like that. And I admire people who can do that. I certainly can't. I'm sorry, but I'm just, you know, I'm not the type of person who can go in there and eat noodles 3 times a day and live in a crappy apartment and put up with the type of shit you have to put up with as a minimum wage worker for 5 years. In order to buy the place I worked at, I would think I would want something more than that for myself anyway. But that's what this guy wanted, and that's great. More power to him. I think it's wonderful. I think we should do more to help guys like that. But you know what? You're not going to help guys like that if you tear down the public transportation system so that he can't get to work in the first place, if you get rid of minimum wage laws so that he can't even earn enough money so that he can save something in the long run. It's a big fucking mess out there. And it's not going to be solved easily. And we all have to work together. And those of us who are hardcore lefties have to realize that there are things that people on the right are saying. Not everybody, because there are some that are just so far fucking out there, like the O'Reillys and the Ann Coulters, that not only ought they to be ignored, they ought to be banned from ever being able to publicly state what they say, and anything more than just, you know, their own website or something like that, because what they say is just absolutely ridiculous. Liberals are not traitors, just like conservatives are not traitors. Even George Bush isn't even necessarily technically a traitor. He's just taking advantage of the system for his own benefit. And whether he cares about, you know, any whatever American ideals, you know, he says to believe in, that's irrelevant. And the fact of the matter is, to him, that is the American ideal. To go out there and get as much money as you possibly can. That's the American dream for him. That's what it's all about. And he and his people represent the cream of the crop. That's what they believe. They have every right to believe that. And I certainly don't blame them for trying. But it's up to us to prevent them from succeeding so much that they fuck everything else up for the rest of us. And that's really what it's all about in the long run, isn't it? Anyway, we got some stuff to do. Our friends at BuzzFlash are coming out. Sam, play us out.
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. This past Wednesday, AOL blared in a welcome page news teaser, quote, "Celebrity critics go after Bush," unquote, with photos of Howard Stern and Whoopi Goldberg posted like mugshots under the headline. Apparently, the AOL webmaster couldn't fit in a photo of Linda Ronstadt. What a pity for them. They fell just short of getting triple Karl Rove bonus points for assisting the GOP by portraying pro-democracy celebrities as vulgarians. How come AOL and the rest of the media didn't include Republican celebrity toadies who get down and dirty about Democrats? Oh, that's simple, because it's okay if you're a Republican. It's called the mainstream media double standard for Democrats. As MediaMatters.org, the new media watchdog organization founded by David Brock, noted, quote, "Despite the flurry of media attention Goldberg's comments have continued to receive, comments made by Dennis Miller, producer and host of CNBC's Dennis Miller, at a Wisconsin rally for President George W. Bush July 14, drew none of the same media fire, despite the fact that, as Washington Post Reliable Source columnist Richard Leiby reported, Miller implied a homosexual attraction between Kerry and Edwards." As Paul Begala elaborated, quote, "Meanwhile, yesterday, Dennis Miller at a Bush rally basically implies that John Edwards and John Kerry are gay, then attacks my pal James Carville for the way he looks, and nobody says anything. I doubt CNN has even covered that story today at all. So why is it that a liberal comedian can make fun of President Bush, but she gets fired from her job? A conservative comedian makes really nasty sexual innuendos about Kerry and Edwards, and nobody says anything. So, it's a double standard." As the July 16th Pittsburgh Gazette column noted, quote, "A week ago, Whoopi stood on the stage of Radio City Music Hall, sipping wine and making unflattering comparisons between her genitalia and President Bush. Puerile sexual humor bores me silly, but hey, lots of Democrats and Republicans seem to like it. Castle Shannon native turned conservative comic Dennis Miller is particularly adept at it, though he's typically not as funny as Whoopi." Ouch. Dennis, you're being dissed as a second-rate vulgarian. But Dennis still has his job and his endorsements, right? We realize that a has-been like Dennis Miller has nowhere to go in his career except by latching onto the fender of the Republican Party. Heck, Miller's fellow entertainer warming up the crowd for Bush in Wisconsin was Wayne Newton. That should tell you how far Miller has fallen. By the way, is it true you and Wayne couldn't keep your hands off of each other while your amigo George was speaking to a hand-picked crowd? Oh, heck, maybe next time you'll be doing a duet of Dunkershane together. Dennis Miller, you're being honored as the 41st BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrite of the Week. If a career could get much lower than yours, it'd have to go underground. Until next week, just remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
And And we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, that URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. And my email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And again, I want to thank all of my listeners at rantradio.com and welcome them as well. And also, I want to urge anybody listening out there to go ahead and get a Cup of Joe mug, Cup of Joe Radio Show coffee mug, or a t-shirt, or a bumper sticker, or a baseball hat, or a mouse pad. I have those on my site. Just go to the blog, that's cupojoe.blogspot.com, and click on the banner up at the top there underneath the Cup of Joe banner where it says Cup of Joe stuff is now available. And on the site, that it leads you to, you can order any of the items that I talked about. Please help out the cause by ordering something really cool and showing how much of a fan you are of the show. I do want to say something about Dennis Miller here real quick, by the way, because I hear some of the people on the left who are angry at Miller, as I am, because, you know, I think he really has turned into just a Republican stooge. And I don't really know when that happened. Probably when he started working for Monday Night Football and started hanging around all those jocks. At any rate, there are some on the left who say that Dennis Miller was never funny. That is absolutely not true at all. There was a time during the 80s when he was doing the news for Saturday Night Live that he was among the funniest people on television. And I used to watch Saturday Night Live just for his news. He was so good at it. He was better than Chevy Chase ever was. He was better than anybody who's done that before or since. And since he went off on his own, he's just sucked. He is just plain fucking sucked. I watched his show on HBO from time to time, and it wasn't anywhere near as funny or as interesting. And none of his rants were anywhere near as good as what they used to be, too. He wasn't necessarily pro-democratic when he was on Saturday Night Live. He would go after everybody, you know. He was just kind of off there, and he'd give all these weird references to shit. And he was funny. Oh, my God, he was so funny. Anyway, but, you know, like BuzzFlash says, he gets to keep his job. And meanwhile, Whoopi Goldberg was dropped from being the Slim Fast spokesman. And I don't know, you know, what the fuck were these people thinking? And I've talked about this before. What the fuck were these people thinking when they picked her up? In the sense that, you know, they knew who she was. She has never made a secret of what her politics were, and she's always spoken about it publicly. And she's been known to have done controversial things, too. When she was going, I don't know if they were going together, but she was hanging out with Ted Danson for a while. And they went to some event where Ted Danson was in blackface, and she had helped him, you know, do that. And, of course, that's a very rude thing to do, but they were just trying to make a joke about it. So it's not like she hasn't done controversial things in the past. And, you know, Whoopi I have a lot of respect for because she's one of those people who worked her way out of dire poverty. She was a welfare mother, and she used her skills and the talent that she had to make a name for herself. So, my wife tells a story about Whoopi, about how, because she was on Star Trek The Next Generation, which is an okay show. I like it kind of, sort of. You know, we watch it when we get the chance here. When it's on during the week now, I'm at work, or I'd probably be watching it fairly regularly. But, you know, my TV watching days, I don't watch anywhere near as much as I used to. At any rate, Whoopi played Guinan on that show, who was an alien. And the reason why she was on that show, or wanted to be on that show, was because she was, as a little girl, she was watching the old Star Trek, and she saw Lieutenant Uhura there. And she was, and according to my wife, Whoopi went to her mother and said, "Mom, there's a black woman on television who's not a maid, you know." So, I admire Whoopi, just as I admire someone like Roseanne, who also worked her way out of poverty, J.K. Rowling, who was on welfare in England, writing her book. I admire my sister, because she was a single mom and really struggling for a while, but she took advantage of whatever the system allowed her to take advantage of. And now she is an editor for Newsday newspaper in New York, and she makes very good money, and she's very successful and very happy. If it hadn't been for those programs, She might be dead, or she might be homeless right now. All people need, all people want, is just a chance, just the opportunity. And you give them that opportunity, and they can make something of themselves. Again, like Bichon's Cambodian friend. When he came here, the reason he succeeded was that he was given the opportunity. If you let some Republicans have their way, guys like him would never make it in this country. They would have it just as bad as the country that they left. And that's the really sad thing. You know, that's the really sad thing. And I look at, you know, I wrote that on the blog that I pointed out that I think I'm kind of sort of a failure at this point in my life because, you know, I'm basically just living in this little basement apartment. I don't have a lot of money. I've blown a lot of different opportunities. And some of it is immaturity. Some of it is you know, maybe not being as responsible. But, you know, there are people who have been as irresponsible as I have, and they seem to do pretty well for themselves. And I'm good at a lot of different things, and I have a lot of desire to do a lot of different things. I mean, I write on the blog, and I do the radio show here and stuff like that, and that takes time and effort. And, of course, you know, since I work 40 hours a week, it actually takes away from whatever free time. And this is what I enjoy doing with my free time. And, you know, while things are bad for me right now, I'm hopeful that sometime in the future somebody might say, hey, you know, I've heard this guy. Let's see if we can get him on our show. And maybe I can get a job doing this or something like that. I wouldn't mind it so much. And I think that if I had, you know, it would be easier for me, certainly, if I had some people with me to help me out. I have so much trouble getting people to help me out. But I have made contact with some people, and, you know, we're gonna work on some things. A very nice guy by the name of Mike who's going to help me out doing different things. He's a real good voice, does real good voice work, too. And I'm going to play a little something that he made a little later on in the show. And actually, not too long from now, because I'm fixing to end this segment here a little quickly and just go right into that last group of setups. Anyway, what else is going on? Not a whole hell of a lot. Let's just go right down to the break, and we'll have some more of the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Sam, play us out.
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen now, you mother...
There's a website fighting President Bunny Pants every day.
BartCop.com.
BartCop mixes unrelenting outrage and piercing humor with his favorite fine tequila.
BartCop.com.
On the web since 1996 with news and commentary not approved by Karl Rove.
BartCop.com.
Live chat rooms to discuss Bush's crimes of the day.
BartCop Radio.
Uncensored invective aimed at those who deserve it most.
BartCop.com.
Fighting the Bush family evil empire.
BartCop.com.
But we need your help.
Go there now.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
BartCop.com.
Welcome to How to Become a Radical Right-Wing Radio Host, or How to Misdirect, Obfuscate, and Doublespeak in order to promote a nebulous political agenda that's a radical right-wing radio host. And now, here's your host, Gavin Mathers.
Thank you, thank you. Welcome to the show.
The first thing to remember about becoming a radical right-wing radio host is that your number one goal is to convince your followers that the liberal left is executing gay heathen commie conspiracies against family values and the American way of life. You must inspire outrage.
outrage in all your listeners, so that they will begin talking about these non-existent issues to all their neighbors, family, and friends. With a little effort, much bluster, and a few pops of OxyContin, you're off and running, and you'll soon have a revolution of conservative values on the make. Now, are there any questions so far? Yes, Yorgi.
Well, I agree with everything you're saying, Gavin, but how do we do this? I don't understand. What is the method used for doing this radio show?
Well, Yorgi, it's so simple you just wouldn't believe it. Here are the tactics at your disposal. Number one, convince your listeners that the truth is not what they think. It's easy to do. If you make statements in a very assertive, confident, and loud manner and repeat them ad nauseum, eventually people will believe everything you say. It's an old confidence trick, a huckster method. And like rubes at their first medicine show, millions of Americans will fall for this simple, old-fashioned stratagem. So try it yourself. It's fun. And it's so inflammatory that you're certain to garner very high ratings and many loyal followers. But that's not all. There's more. Number two, split hairs and use semantics as much as possible to extract the most minimal point from every debate. The heart of radical right-wing radio lies in the gaps between the truth. If you can get an opponent to admit failure on even a simple point, then they are that much closer to defeat. Then you can claim victory, at least in the minds of your fans. Oh, a question. Yes, Rufus.
Well, I don't rightly understand that. I mean, certainly you should use some sort of logical argument whereby you defeat them using logic and outmaneuvering them in an intellectual fashion. Is that not true?
No, Rufus. As a matter of fact, 50% of the population will fall for this ruse every single time. It's a guaranteed, surefire method of winning people over and converting them to conservative values. Number three, pick a major political opponent and make it your raison d'etre to destroy him. You'll seem more like a Superman if you have your own supervillain. Then, when that political opponent is replaced by your own champion, make sure your audience knows that any criticism against the government is unpatriotic and treasonous. Number four. When any political issue comes up, make sure to pick the most extreme possibilities in any solution offered. Then pretend to be outraged that anyone would even consider such a far-out idea. Go on ranting and raving a bit until people forget what the original issue was. Make sure to use terms like commie and pinko a lot. Throw in a few heathens for good measure. It'll get the religious right on your side. Yes, you have a question, Mr. Dole?
Yes, I certainly do. Well, as a matter of fact, I was thinking about that today, and I think it may be possible to go too far.
Well, that is true. There is always the risk of excessive foaming of the mouth, especially when heavy OxyContin use is involved. However, it's important to realize that you have to make an impact. This is about entertainment. This isn't about news. Of course not. We have to keep them entertained to distract them from real issues.
3 minutes, Mr. Mathers.
Right. We are running short on time, so moving right along to number five. Number five. Where's the special sound? Where's the special sound? Can I get a special sound, please?
Oh, I don't know, Ducky. I'll have to rewind the tape.
Well, hurry up. Ah, we're ready now. Number five. If ever your debate opponent makes a good critical point about one of your political heroes, make sure you point out how a prominent Democrat or liberal has done this same thing at some time in the past. It's called a U2 logical fallacy, and it's very useful. Keep examples of your political opponent's prior failures on hand to use when needed. They don't have to be solid or recent. Just use tactics 1 and 2 to help out as necessary. Of course, this method won't do anything to actually defend your side, but it will tarnish your opponent and make your audience forget to whom the accusation was originally leveled. Number 6. Come to think of it, let's just drop the special sounds, okay?
Sure thing, sweetie.
Number 6. Make sure to arm yourself with plenty of labels to cast on your political opponents, whether they are liberals, socialists, communists, pinkos, faggots, or tax-and-spend Democrats. No term is too vulgar to label your opponents with in order to avoid addressing any of their actual arguments or issues. The advantage is that you'll gain tremendous support from highly prejudiced people. And we all know that 99% of them vote Republican. Number 7. If you can attack the argument, attack the person making the argument. Ad hominem arguments are the bread and butter of radical right-wing radio. An example would be, what do you know? You're just a commie pinko. However, reserve this for the final method when all others have failed. Number 8. As a last resort, there's always the disconnect button on the telephone panel. Don't be afraid to use it when callers get unruly. Contrary to popular belief, your public won't think you failed in your arguments. They'll just say, well, I guess he showed him.
Look, it's H. Ross Perot!
Now just hold on a second. Hold on a second here.
Oh, no, not again.
Hear me out. Now just hold on a minute, sonny. I don't believe the American people are going to fall for that. And if you don't believe me, read the Washington Post. Now, if you just pay attention to this chart over here, I'll show you how it's done.
Now, now, Mr. Perot, you weren't invited here. Now leave and form your own party, please.
Well, I might just do that. You just wait and see. I'll form my own party, and I'll cost George H.W. Bush the election in 92, and then I'll turn around and endorse his son in 2000. You wait. I'll show you. I'll show you. You'll be sorry. You'll be sorry.
Well, you can just go right ahead and do that, because you're not wanted here. Goodbye. Silly little man.
One minute, Mr. Mathers.
Right, we're almost out of time, but that's it. Give it a whirl, who knows? Maybe one day you'll be a major talk news radio host for the extreme right wing, and you'll have legions of fans who are willing to think and behave just like you. So, this has been Gavin Mathers wishing you good luck, and so long, everyone. Bye-bye.
Remember, results may vary depending on user conditions, number of political contributions, and degree of OxyContin use. Warning, excessive OxyContin use may cause liver disease, bronchitis, hard pad, the clap, mange, excessive foaming of the mouth, and extreme political opinions. Use only as directed.
Oh no, why did we have to go? Bush keeps on lying. Children keep on dying. Please, please, can't we pack and leave? Smirk ain't no savior. 43's a failure. Bush lied, soldiers died. The heart of America broke inside. Whoever dreamed it could be so bad? He's the worst president we ever had. Get out of Iraq. Get out of Iraq.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, my URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. And my email address is joevec@bellsouth.com. .net. That's J-O-E-V as in victory, E-C at bellsouth.net. And I hope you're having a very good evening. As I speak, it is Thursday evening at 8:35 p.m. For those of you listening on rantradio.com, no, this is not a live show. I don't do live shows on rantradio.com for several different reasons. Technical is part of the reason, but also because I like to be a little bit more settled about what I talk about, and also because sometimes I'm just too damn tired to do a show at 12 midnight on a Sunday when I have to go to work the next day, even though I work in the evenings. That was Simple Fears, by the way, that song that was played there called Get Out of Iraq, and it was made by a friend of mine who I know as Brew from the BartCop chat room and from the BartCop board, from the BartCop forum. And I urge you to go to simplefears.com, spelled just like it sounds, simplefears.com, no dashes, no nothing, www.simplefears.com, and you can purchase a full copy of that song. That was just a sample. You can purchase a full copy of that song for $1.25 to download, or you can purchase it on a CD if you so desire. And we're in the midst of working on what we've talked about. Anyway, we haven't begun yet, but we've talked about working on a CD of all political of political songs and political clips and stuff like that. My friend Mike made that previous thing, How to Be a Right-Wing Radio, and it's a little raw, and it's not necessarily the way I would have done it, but it's very good, and Mike does a lot of great voices. All of those voices are his in that, and he does a great job. And he'll have a website soon, and he's just started to work on it. As soon as that's done, I will certainly put a plug in for it, because he does very well, and he's going to help me do some commercials. So go ahead and get the song, $1.25. Come on, you can afford $1.25. If I can afford it, you can afford it. I laid out the dough. You know, the Brew put $1,500 into his own money, renting the studio, getting the musicians, and doing all that, and putting that song together. It's a damn good song, and much better than that folk music shit some people keep sending me. And I'm sorry if I offend people when I say that, but you know what? You know, the folk music shit is over. Go listen to it at home. It doesn't have any place anymore in political campaigning. That was 40 years ago. Grow up. It's the 2000s. It's the 21st fucking century. No more fucking folk music. I don't want to hear it. Take your fucking acoustic. No, I don't want to get into that shit. That's a really, really good punk rock song. Anyway, where were we? Nowhere, apparently. Where is my friend Dave Merrill? That's what I was thinking of earlier, and I went on to his live journal, and that's livejournal.com/users/Dave Merrill, DaveDaveMerrill. And he moved to Canada recently. I bought his wife's car, actually. And he did not move to Canada for political reasons, although the atmosphere in this country was getting rather soiled for him. His wife moved down here to marry him. And she stayed here for a while and decided she didn't like it too much, and Dave decided he'd probably had enough. So he moved up to Canada. I want to congratulate him because he just got his first job up there working. He said it's a contract job, maybe a month or so, but it might lead to bigger or better things, and I'm very, very happy for him. And he's talking about how things are in Canada. Let me read a little bit about what he said there. Where did I put that? There we go. Where is it? It was out of here somewhere. There we go. Okay. He says, so I'm downtown, a block from the world-famous Second City in Wayne Gretzky's restaurant, a block from CBC headquarters on the sixth floor of a building, working for a National Institute for Financial Professionals, let's just say. I get to use the DocuTech 135 and the DigiPath, which are two very high-tech copying machines. Lots of scanning, lots of retrieving files from file libraries, using all the Xerox DigiPath knowledge I get trained on by Xerox. It's a great environment, only a few co-workers, everybody's friendly, and the equipment is all new and well taken care of. And while this is a month-long contract, they've given me a workstation, pass card, and a coffee cup of my very own. So yeah, I'm happy in my work. Now, Dave is not making huge sums of money, but he's actually getting treatment in Canada as if he were making huge sums of money. He does okay. I'm not saying he's among the working poor up there, but he's doing pretty well. But in order for you to get the kind of treatment that he's getting in the United States, you'd have to be making a lot more money than what he's currently making. So congratulations to him. But that's not really what I wanted to talk about, because it was while I was looking through his live journal that I came across this article that he linked from The Star. And I don't usually do this, but I'm going to read the whole article because this is really, really funny. And this is from the Toronto Star. And the title of the article is Bush Wins Big at Stupidity Awards. The November elections may still be ahead of him, but U.S. President George W. Bush came out a very big winner yesterday at the World Stupidity Awards. Bush was a dominating presence at the second edition of the awards presented at the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. Host Lewis Black, whose biting satire is a highlight of TV's The Daily Show, took pride in the recognition the United States received at the awards, saying, "We are the gold standard!" Black said the awards celebrate the prose and perfection in idiocy because real stupidity is hard work. It's easy to fall down a manhole. It's easy to put the candles too close to the drapes. It's easy to launch a military invasion of another country based on a few blurry satellite photos, he observed. This year, my people, we scale the Everest of stupidity, and we stand upon its peak. Bush took the Stupidest Man of the Year award for the second time in the history of the two-year-old awards, and won the Stupidity Award for Reckless Endangerment of the Planet. The award was presented by Justin Trudeau, son of former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau. He got the biggest reaction of the night from females in the packed house who hooted, whistled, and yelled yum at him while he was on stage. Bush didn't take the category alone, however. He tied with British Prime Minister Tony Blair. The controversial Texan president shared in two other awards as the United States was noted for having the stupidest government of the year. What was interesting about that is that the decision was made overwhelmingly by Americans who voted, said Albert Nirenberg of the main organization revealing obvious numbskulls, which won the award, and that's moron. Spelt the correct way, by the way. There's a famous picture of a right-winger hold-up sign. He says, get a life, morons, but it was spelled M-O-R-A-N-S. Fucking dumbass. Anyway, nominations and voting took place at the organization's online site, except for the Lifetime Achievement Award, which is settled by the judges. The nominations were judged by experts in their fields, a bunch of idiots, and overseen by the Academy for Recognizing Stupidity Everywhere. ARSE, Stupidest Statement of the Year was Bush's pronouncement that combat operations have ended in Iraq, where fighting still rages more than a year after the U.S.-led invasion to topple Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. Bush beat out pop princess Britney Spears, nominated for saying "I do" at her brief Las Vegas wedding, and singer Jessica Simpson, who wondered aloud on TV, "Why does chicken by the sea taste like tuna? Is it chicken or tuna?" Though he is facing war crimes charges after being captured by U.S. forces, Saddam can take solace in the Lifetime Achievement Award for Stupidity, which was bestowed upon him with a musical tribute and a montage of film clips and photos, including one of him getting a fashion makeover from the cast of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Iraq and the conservative right of the United States figured heavily in the awards, which declared Fox's The O'Reilly Factor the stupidest TV show and gave Fox News the nod for media outlet which has made the greatest contribution to furthering ignorance worldwide. Also, Stupidest Woman of the Year was U.S. soldier Private Lynn England, who became notorious after pictures were published of her allegedly abusing Arab prisoners in a Baghdad military prison. She is facing charges. Presenter Maggie Casella said England beat out convicted homemaking guru Martha Stewart, dysfunctional rocker Courtney Love, Anna Nicole Smith, and Michael Jackson, who finally had enough surgery to place himself in this category. Cast members from Survivor All-Stars gave the award for Stupidest Trend, which was trucker hats. Stupidest Act of the Year went to crocodile hunter Steve Irwin, who cradled his baby while feeding a crocodile, an act which sparked a storm of protests. "What is it with celebrities dangling their babies?" asked presenter Scott Thompson of Kids in the Hall fame. "Next year they'll be eating them. Good thing cocaine is an appetite suppressant." Oh, God. Giggly, G-I-G-L-I, and I forget how that's pronounced, which is considered one of the worst movies of the year and an albatross for stars Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez, tied with Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ as stupidest movie. The tie was to be broken by audience members at the Friday night event, but the audience couldn't decide which was the worst, so this tie stayed. Although Canada was shut out, Nirenberg said it was a banner year for stupidity. "It was a stupendous year for stupidity," he said. The show ended with a raucous musical number by Mini Kiss, a group of singing dwarves who perform made up like the 70s glam rock group. Oh, man, I wish I could have been there to see that. I wish that would have been televised. Oh, that's really, really funny. There are other awards that are similar to that. There's the Darwin Awards, where people die in really, really bad ways. And The Onion, of course, is the newspaper that celebrates stupidity. And They have a great book, and if you haven't seen it already, it's called Our Dumb Century, which basically is really, really funny headlines from 1900 to 2000. And what's interesting about this whole thing is that on my show Audio Hell, which is available at akaradio.com, formerly Cam Mafia Radio, it's now akaradio.com, you can listen in there, I played a comedy bit from Jeff Foxworthy, who's known for You Might Be a Redneck If, but he had a real, real funny routine just about stupid people. And he was saying how stupid people ought to be required to wear a sign, just so that you know. Just so that you know that you can't sell them certain things or you can't do certain things to people. And Jeff is from Texas, and he talks about how people talk on there. And it's too long a clip, obviously, to play here, but it just my wife always cracks up. In fact, she's listened to it so much, she's got it practically memorized, which is tough for her. By the way, with her dyslexia, it's very difficult for her to memorize anything. But she memorized, and it was a bit where he had a flat tire, and he goes into a place to get it fixed, and the guy looks at it, and he says, I swear, he said, tire go flat? And he said, I couldn't resist. I said, nope, the other three just swelled up on me. And without missing a beat, the guy says, he'll do that. Here's your sign. And whenever I see somebody do something really stupid like that, I just go, here's your sign. Oh, God. I needed that. The Audio Hell Show airs Saturday afternoons from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it is a live show. And mostly it's music. I don't talk about the politics stuff there, although it kind of sort of creeps in. I played a Linda Ronstadt song in favor of it. I should find the Margaret Cho piece and a Whoopi Goldberg piece to play. Margaret Cho is really funny. By the way, Margaret Cho, by the way, was disinvited because of the controversy surrounding with Whoopi Goldberg. She was disinvited from a Democratic event that was going to be held at the convention, which talking about stupid is just fucking stupid. Listen, the right wingers are gonna hit you no matter what you fucking do. So you might as well just go ahead and do what you enjoy doing. And part of that should be having Margaret Cho at your show because she is a genuinely funny person. And in fact, I remember she had a great thing on HBO, a great concert, and she was talking about her mother. And apparently Margaret Cho's real name is Mulan. Mulan! As her mother might say. And she had a lot of really hilarious bits dealing with her mother. But anyway, I encourage you to listen to my Audio Hell radio show. And of course, I also encourage you to write me, either write a comment on the blog itself, excuse me, or email me at joevec@bellsouth.net. And you can tell by the way I'm talking here that I'm just trying to kill about a minute and 45 seconds just to bring this up to the closing music and the outro, as I found out that it's called. I'm learning all sorts of things about radio, putting the show together. And it's important for me to try to fit this into exactly an hour. If I ever get a gig on radio, I have to be much more mindful of time. Before I go, let me thank again all of my listeners at rantradio.com and remind everybody of the URL, cupojoe.blogspot.com. And ask you once more, if you've got a couple of dollars to spare, buy a t-shirt, buy a mug, buy something, help me out. You know, I'm trying to raise $70 so I can get a new mixer. And I'm waiting on a new motherboard. A fan of the show had an older motherboard that he was going to send me, which is an improvement over the one I have. And I'm looking forward to getting that so I can put it in. I'll have to do it over the weekend because that's going to be like an all-day project. So I'll probably have to spend a Saturday putting together the show and get everything set for Sunday so that Sunday I can put the motherboard in and get everything tested. That'll probably be the way I have to do it. But anyway, I'm going to wrap this all up here. And I'm glad you all listened in. And I want to thank again everybody listening at White Rose Society. I want to thank everybody listening at rantradio.com. Until Thursday, this coming Thursday, this is Joe Vecchio from the Cup of Joe Show signing off. Bye, everybody. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.